The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back by popular demand, George Young, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic. George, how are you?
Doing fantastic. Grateful to be back again.
You know, I measure everything. You know, when I put videos on YouTube, when I do podcasts and radio, I measure everything. And so the last appearance we had a very, very good response on it. And I was kind of surprised, to tell you the truth, because of a company not many people know about Elastic. You know, when if I'd sat next to someone in the metro, very few people know what Elastic's all about. Yet the last interview you had in the air here, it did very, very well. And I thought, well, maybe it's resonating. Maybe it's hitting a nerve, or maybe it's actually saving my listeners money. Heaven forbid, huh, George?
It is definitely doing that. And, you know, what we find is that we have a small but passionate community surrounding us. One of the fun things about working with this company has been how passionate our users are, and they're our best advocates. And so this has kind of been a bottoms-up approach.
Tell us about your background first, then we'll talk about your company and how you can help my listeners.
So I've been in enterprise sales for 30 years now, and work for big organizations like Cisco and IBM, and as well as a number of startups. Cut my teeth in the open source world with MongoDB before I came on to Elastic, and started the federal practice here, which has grown faster than any federal business I've ever seen before. From scratch, you know, we've got a very large team now, support state and local as well, and have a very diverse and passionate user base.
Elastic been around just since 2012.
Yes, it's been an amazing growth story. You know, we had over 100 million downloads since 2012. Whew. And our VCs tell us we're one of the fastest growing companies that they have in their portfolio.
Wow, that's wonderful. Where's it based?
We have our U.S. headquarters is in the Silicon Valley in Mountain View. We are a very globally distributed company. One of the great philosophies of the culture here is to find great people and hire them wherever they are. So, we do a lot virtually. We're very collaborative, digitally, and it's been made for a really special culture.
Because I'm an old geezer stuck in my ways, so I was talking to a young fellow, and he told me that, John, 2/3 of developers live outside the United States. And I said, you're probably right. I just never, my little brain doesn't think that way. But if that's where 2/3 of the talent is, well, then guess what? I'm going after where the talent is. I don't care. Tall, short, big, I don't know. North, south.
Well, and I think there's a big dynamic there. You know, it's a heck of a lot cheaper to live in Oklahoma City than it is in the Washington, D.C. area. And, a lot of companies have gone from, everyone needs to be in this office in New York City or in Silicon Valley, and at this cost of life, versus why not have a virtual team, spread out, throughout that. And I think, that the tools have changed to allow people to still experience community and get stuff done.
That community word is going to pop up more and more. It popped up in our first interview as well. But there's something very special about your company. I want to let the listeners know. If you want to find more information, you got to be careful about finding them online. It's elastic.co, and you get more information there. They got a kind of a fun website. They've got blogs. They've got videos, all kinds of ways to learn more about this. Now, so what I do, I go to events all the time. I'm sitting next to govies and CIOs and the federal government, talking to them and rubbing shoulders. And a lot of them got this inferiority complex. And, woe is me. We got these big ambitious goals. We don't have any money. And I said, no, wait. Wait, we can go to Chicago or Tulsa or Oklahoma City in a commercial world and find out people with the same problems. And the govies always go, oh, no, it's just us. So here's a headline from an article I read this morning. Only 5% of large companies are prepared to meet IT requirements of the new digital business. That could be a govy talking, but that's true everywhere, isn't it?
That is definitely true. And everyone is struggling with this. And one of the neat things about how open source is changing things is that there are innovators within the government, within commercial, that are down at the grunt level. And they go and they download this software and they start solving problems. And, you know, we go in and meet with the executives and we're like, hey, by the way, you know, Mary and Bob and Tom have already solved this problem for you. You just need to, you know, get behind them, you know, but you already have people who are doing this stuff. So a lot of it is kind of under the radar. And, you know, there's a lot of great opportunity for organizations to take advantage of those best practices.
Well, today my radar is Twitter. And if you go to your Twitter account, you'll find out that this relatively new company has like 28,000 followers, and they only have like 4,000 tweets. So, you know, I look at ratios all the time, and that means something's going on there. The app, if you tweet 30,000 times, have 10 followers, it's not a good sign. If you have 4,000 tweets and 30,000 followers, that means you're hitting something, you're responding to a need or maybe a perceived problem that people have, and they can go to your site, download it, and test it out, and then call up old George and say, okay, George, now we know, come on in now.
This has really been great. You know, it's been, you know, word of mouth has really, you know, driven us, you know, to a large degree in social media and things. We had our user conference out in California recently, and, you know, we had a user from the federal sector who came, who had never done anything with us before, is their first thing, you know, with us. They had such a great time. By the end of the event, they contacted me and said, hey, I called my friend who is the vice president at a bank and said, you need to be using this for cybersecurity. And he wanted to know for me how to get them in touch with, you know, an Elastic person who covered that particular bank. So that is a, you know, a typical story for us, is that, you know, people see this, they see it solves important problems for them, and, you know, and they start sharing that news with other people.
So let's say your listeners are listening to this, and the Nationals are in the World Series beating the Red Sox, let's say theoretically, and so they go to your website maybe, and they find out words like Kibana and Beats and Logstash and all these different words that they may not be familiar with. Just for the sake of our listeners, talk about some of these technologies that you can see at your website.
Yeah, so, you know, Elasticsearch is the core product, which is a search and analytics platform. It's built on technology that's been around for a long time, but we figured out how to make it scale massively. So, you know, search is looking for, you know, the Google type search, you know, tell me the 10 most relevant things about, you know, these terms. Analytics is really about massive scale. Tell me the moving average of the mention of the keyword riot in this Twitter stream, or, you know, how often, you know, the standard deviation, one standard deviation, one direction or another for my network traffic. So we can do these massive scale analytics on petabytes of data within 2 seconds of ingest, which is unheard of before. There is no other tool that can do this type of thing at those types of scale. So we added to that a visualization capability called Kibana, which allows, you know, a non-user to sit down and look at graphs and charts and geospatial displays of data and start cranking through and asking interesting questions and discovering really interesting data from it. And then Logstash and Beats are means of bringing machine data into Elasticsearch. We bring a lot of different kinds of data. We can bring geospatial, temporal, machine data, log files, relational databases, things that are, you know, like in phone books, you know, as well as unstructured data like tweets and blog posts. So all of that can be brought into this massive system. And when you think about what you could possibly do now, within a day, I can ingest all of this data. I can start analyzing it. I can visualize it and ask questions of it. And that's the power of what we do.
You're stumbling on words that I think are really, really getting popular. I was a master of ceremonies at a Tableau software event, and the slides got jammed. And so I had to stand up there and vamp. And so I surveyed the audience. And I said, okay, show of hands, who wants to use visualization for finance? Who wants to use visualization for cybersecurity? Who wants to use visualization for geospatial? I had 30 people raise their hands. I said, really? Because geospatial information is coming in. It's like from the sky coming into your desk. And what do you do with all this information? I mean, this is a challenge for many of my listeners.
Yes. And in fact, you know, mapping geospatial with other information, you know, we did a demo where we basically took crime data in the county in London. And we basically said, what's anomalous about crime data? There's a certain amount of, you know, of theft that goes across all of London. And when you visualize it on a map, you can see suddenly this big bar that pops out and you see that there's a bunch of bike theft. Well, it just so happens that's in Cambridge. You know, makes a lot of sense. That's where all the universities are. There's another place where there's a lot of violent crime. Well, when you drill down on the map, you can see that that's where the local jail is. So the inmates are having, you know, fights with one another. So marrying the data that we have with geospatial allows you new ways to explore the data and to find anomalies in the data, We've done one actually on speed cameras in DC. We can tell you actually which speed camera in DC is the most frequently used one and which one gets the most people. It happens to be on a tunnel.
And stay tuned after this commercial message and we'll tell you which one it is. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today is George Young, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, George Young, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic. Okay, we teased before the break, so what is the stoplight that catches everyone?
It's the under the 3rd Street Tunnel.
The 3rd Street. Well, you save people lots of money. Really, that's the one that really nails a lot of people, the 3rd Street Tunnel. Yeah, my. That's interesting. Before the break, we talked about all kinds of applications for Elastic, and the conversation somehow led to geospatial, and then we started talking about this company called Digital Global. Is that right? Yeah. And so tell us the problem that Digital Global solves and where you guys fit in.
Yeah, so Digital Global takes in massive amounts of imagery data every day. And they enhance that data with, you know, everything from social media to blog posts and news stories. And they use that for a number of different purposes. You know, one good example for them was they use it to track things like the Nepal earthquake. And a really interesting use case there. One, they were able to track the refugee movement away from where the epicenter was, you know, out and as well as back, using things like tweets. So they can now say geospatially, where are these refugees located? And are they coming, you know, are they moving away or are they coming back to, you know, to the original area? They also allowed people to crowdsource the damage, you know, locally. So you could say, this is my house. And I could actually, you know, put in on my phone and say it's completely destroyed or only one story has, you know, some damage on there. So trying to get your hands around, you know, public disasters like that, a huge problem for folks. And Digital Globe doing some really interesting stuff using Elasticsearch. They're actually, you know, processing somewhere on the magnitude of 9 petabytes.
That's
of
with
data.
With a P like in
That's
Paul.
Right. You have to look it up. It's really great when you consider the massive volumes of geospatial information that we have, but when you want to overlay it and enrich it with other types of data, you can now get some interesting stuff.
Such a funny world I live in. We about 6 months ago, we had on Human Geo in the studio with Al DiLeonardo and Abe Usher. And next thing you know, they got bought out by Radian. Next thing you know, Radian got bought out by
Digital Globe. And all three of them are users of Elasticsearch today. And they all use it in various levels associated. Because anyone who's solving big data geospatial problems is going to be using Elasticsearch as part of their solution.
My. And then Digital was bought up by a different company too?
By MDA bought Digital Globe. So the shell game continues.
Yeah, amazing. I teach at Georgetown University. And I have students from every country in the world, from Peru to every place. And each one has a different interest, some finance, some open source, some geospatial. And so I did a survey in the class. I guess I do a lot of surveys. I said, okay, who's interested in geospatial? Who's interested in open source? And one kid kept his hand up. And I said, okay, I'm going to connect you up with Boundless because it's open source and it's also geospatial. And they kind of work with, you know, Radiant, Human Geo, MDA, Digital Global, in some ways, and they don't. And so I'm forcing my student to filter that and present to the class, where does open source fit in? It fits in right with you, doesn't it?
That's correct. Yep. So they do a great job, you know, in complementing our technology, solving a different part of the tech stack, you know, issues that people have.
So tech stack, when I go to your site, I see words like Beats, B-E-A-T-S, and Logstash. So what is Beats?
Beats is a lightweight agent that can sit on things and forward interesting pieces of the data. Maybe metric data, maybe telling me things like, you know, when is this system up or down? When is it functioning normal? It may be forwarding on things like window event logs. You know, an interesting story on cybersecurity is that a lot of our government users are not keeping Windows event logs because it's very expensive. There's a ton of them. And people are like, what can I do with that? Well, we had a user in the DoD who said, I'm going to build a proof of concept. I'm going to take this garbage data, use thing like Beats to take this Windows event logs and put it into Elastic. And when they did that, they built their proof of concept and turned on the live network, and they found data being exfiltrated that they hadn't picked up in any of the other sensors that were out there because they were throwing the data away. And this is a common thing that, you know, that we see, you know, across government and industry is, you know, how do we handle these massive volumes of data? You know, I want to get as much information as I can, but I have a very limited budget. So using technologies like Beats allows you to go collect that data, to put it into a massively parallel system like Elasticsearch, and then search for bad guys and interesting pieces of data in there.
Now, F5 Networks tells me that a lot of people try to, they're careful about what comes into their network and not so careful about what leaves their network. Exfiltration, this is where some of the bad guys get their information, and people are so worried about the front door, the back door is open. And the front door's got 2 bolts and 6 bolts and 2 Marine guards and a tank, and the back door's wide open. Exfiltration is terrible.
Well, we have to think about that. We have to think in this day and age, you know, about insider threat as well, and people putting things on thumb drives and other means of taking data, you know, off of your network. So, you know, that kind of comes back to, you know, a lot of this is now anomaly based. You know, the problem with a lot of the cybersecurity approaches is that they're based on known threats. So if I know that you know, bad guys typically, you know, have 3 failed login attempts in a 30-minute window, that's a bad guy, you know. That's one thing. But the problem, you know, we have now is that we no longer know what the bad guys are doing. We no longer have these known knowns about them. And so it is moving more to an anomaly-based detection, which is that something weird is going on here. You know, this PC is on hours that it's not usually on. This network is acting different than it usually does, and starting to investigate, you know, anomalies and seeing what's associated with that. And that's been a, you know, significant change, I think, for cybersecurity.
Let me grab a verb you used earlier, ingest. So if Elastic can ingest petabytes with petabytes of information, and quickly find out what's going on. I would imagine that there's organizations work for the federal government that may be involved in intelligence that might be interested in some of your activities.
Well, certainly, you know, there's a lot for law enforcement. You know, there's a lot of really interesting use cases around law enforcement, you know, and finding, you know, anomalies in the data, predictive analytics around, you know, things, you know, investigative, you know, services. So there's a great play there for anyone who wants to look at big data and meld together data sets that don't normally get melded together. You know, you usually have, this is my social media analysis thing, and then I've got my proprietary data, and then I've got my geospatial data, and I've got my log data. You know, what if I could put them all in one place and now ask creative questions that I've never, you know, asked before?
You used the word meld, M-E-L-D. That's a word, comes from card play, doesn't it? An interesting term to use. It means many things to many people. You should put a T in there, but use the correct consonant. So I go to events all the time. I'm hobnobbing with, you know, CEOs, federal government, and all kinds of people. I was at a Salesforce event last week, and I met this guy named Parker Harris. And I didn't get to talk to his buddy, the other guy at Salesforce, but Parker's one of the founders there. And we're chatting about everything and this and that, and he's talking about analytics, and he's talking about predictive analytics. And, you know, I was polite, and I was a going home that evening, I was saying to myself, what? Does everyone do analytics? I mean, you can go to 7-Eleven, get you a jar of analytics. I mean, it seems like it's almost a Me Too thing. Oh, yeah, we do analytics. And what he was talking about, what Parker was talking about was, well, yeah, they got this thing called Einstein, and then IBM's got the thing called Watson. And I'm going, well, you know, I can play catch with the football with my son in the backyard. I'm not going to be pushing on any 300-pound linebackers. And there's analytics, and there's analytics, you know.
Yeah, it's an overused term. Unfortunately, the whole tech industry, you know, so machine learning's the, you know, and AI are the hot terms now, as well as analytics. So everyone has a message, you know, around it. And I think it's really, you know, what's the right technology for the right problem that you have? And, you know, saying you have analytics and doing something practical with it is one thing. So we're all users, you know, of Salesforce. You know, we use it internally at Elastic. But it's very difficult sometimes to look at patterns in the data inside of Salesforce. So we took our data out of Salesforce, we put it into Elastic, and we can actually now look at, you know, by rep and by engineer, what the connections are, who's working most with what, who are the users they're working with the most. And so, you know, we've been able to get a lot more of our data from Salesforce by putting it into Elasticsearch.
It's like John Gilroy doing the analytics versus Isaac Newton doing the analytics. It's like, okay, this is fine. Now we're going to do major league stuff.
Correct. And then, you know, oftentimes, you know, we find, you know, using things, tools like Kibana will allow your data scientists, who are very expensive and very hard to find, to ask the right questions of the data. So, you know, you're wasting time with a data scientist if you have them just going willy-nilly asking questions. But if you can now look and say, this looks like an interesting anomaly. You know, why is this happening in my data? Then your data scientists can go and use all their toolkits to really crack down on those specific things. But you really need a first level layman's look at the data before you can actually ask those intelligent questions.
You know, a tax day was last week, and I think of a bookkeeper and then an enrolled agent and then a CPA and then an actuary. And these are all different skills. You can all, you know, these basic accounting and number skills, but the actuary is a smart one. I mean, and I'm sure the bookkeeper can do analytics, but you want your actuary doing, the guy took the 7 tests, and that's really the level there, just because the tax.
We did a project with a DoD user recently, and they were looking at the Kibana dashboards, and they said, you know, I've got thousands of people who can operate this. I've got 20 people who can do this high level, you know, hardcore data analytics that is required in tools like Apache Zeppelin. And so, you know, it's really great that there is, you know, multiple tools out there to solve different problems. You know, we're a tool that's great for the masses, you know, to get a hold of data and find interesting things.
Hey, let's take a break. Come back. We move from Apache to Apache Lucene. Is that what it's called? L-U-C-E-N-E. And I'll talk about what Lucene's got to do with the federal government. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, George Young, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. By the way, George, this is my 500th show.
Wow.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
That's awesome.
We're talking with George Young, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic, kind of a harder website to find, you might think, elastic.co. Get more information there. Before the break, we were talking about Apache, the Apache Foundation. There's all kinds of little products within there. And there's one that's called L-U-C-E-N-E, Lucene, is that right?
That's correct.
And so what does that do for my listeners?
So Lucene has been around for a long time. It was written by the same guy who wrote Hadoop, which another big data technology. And search technology, frankly, the idea of creating inverted indices, you know, has been around since the 60s on mainframes. And Lucene kind of brought that into the 2000s timeframe and has been a well-understood, well-used technology. The problem with Lucene was it didn't scale really well. So what Elastic did was we built on top of Lucene, and we actually are very heavy committers to the Lucene community, and we are actually figuring out how to make Lucene go from, you know, something that can handle a couple terabytes of data to something that can handle petabytes of data. So it's another open source project that we're actively involved with that, you know, the good news is we're working with technology that's been around for a long time. It's been proven. It's behind, you know, well-known web entities that you use every day, from Uber to Netflix to Wikipedia.
So I'm trying to bring this down to the real world for my listeners. And people get the idea of the satellites and petabytes of data and everything else. And that's maybe abstract for some people. I'm going to make it real practical here. So I was having a coffee with a neighbor of mine, a guy by the name of Dave Rubel. And I'm talking to him about cybersecurity. And this guy's way smart. He writes articles. He's CISSP. He's brilliant when it comes to everything. But he's passionate about racing drones. He's in a drone racing league. And I said, well, my son would really love that. And he said, well, what you do is you put on some virtual reality goggles. And the drone itself has got a camera in front of it. And you actually see the race. You're really racing. It bumps into walls. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting. I said, I'll bet that collects a lot of data.
That's
and I'm sure there's people who race drones that take the analytics and they and think of that amount of information. This is just from some people in Loudoun County racing drones. I mean, there's so much information being collected everywhere, from just something as simple as drone racers to satellites.
That's correct. And we're seeing, we're working with a number of automakers on data that's coming off of self-driving cars. They're actually generating, you know, on the amount of 1 terabyte per hour per car. So when you think about the massive amount of, you know, data that's being generated, you know, by these types of things, and what are you going to do with IoT, which is a big problem that folks are struggling with right now, Elastic's a great place to put that kind of stuff, you know, because, you know, we can take, you know, feeds sensor data off of drones. We actually do a great demo where we actually show in real time what's going on with a particular drone. And then the engineer who was running the demo crashed the drone and we got to see it crash. It was probably the highlight of the demo for everybody.
Happens all the time in racing.
So, you know, the question that people have to struggle with is like, oh, it's great that I have all of this data. I can see from a self-driving car, but what am I going to do with it? Where can I put it? Where can I look at it, you know, in something that's near real time? and actually decide, make changes based on the information that I'm seeing there.
Let's go from IoT to the DoD. There's a transition for you. So you worked on a project with the National Guard and the DoD, something about ROC, NSM. What's that all about?
Yeah, again, what I love about the community around Elastic is that there are these people who just have hard problems to solve who went out to solve them. So some of the folks in the DoD and actually the Missouri National Guard went out and said, hey, there's not a great way to take information from various cybersecurity sensors that are open source like Bro and Suricata. And so they said, we're going to build something that uses Elastic that allows people to press a button and to deploy something that can get these sensors out and into the networks and have some pre-built dashboards that allow them to do that. And so it's taken off across the DoD. You know, there are tons of people that are using this on these cyber protection teams who have now taken the open source ROC NSM project, and it's actually gone into other organizations in the civilian government as well as in commercial. So a handful of innovators now have said, hey, here's our work. It's free. Go download it. Start out with that. And it's solving hard problems. And people are able to take that without any knowledge of Elasticsearch and be operational within a day.
You know, use the word community again. And I wrote down another C word. I wrote down collaboration. And I think the generation that is out there racing drones, you know, 25, 35, they're probably more comfortable with collaboration than old geezers like I am. And you always think, well, collaboration tool. Well, the collaboration tool you should use is SharePoint. No. Collaboration tool can be a piece of paper. It can be a whiteboard. It can be a data set. It can be a shared data set. It can be something on Google. And so I think what you're doing is you're taking this problem with the National Guard and solving it in a collaborative manner, but you're not using the textbook, this is a collaboration, you must use Slack. It's nothing to do with Slack. It's got to do with really targeting in on that solution.
Right, it's what works. And then, you know, what's nice is that, you know, somebody will take that. We have another group, you know, we work with a company called Decision Lab, and Decision Lab has taken the ROC NSM product and have figured out how to deploy it even faster and at larger scales. And so, you know, the nice thing about this community is that once it gets out there, other folks can add in and say, oh, I want it to do this and I want to add that. And they contribute it back to the community. And so rather than anyone dictating, and part of my guidance to the DoD executives has been, rather than you giving a top-down policy and telling people, why don't you find from the bottom up what's working and empower and enable them to do that, you know, versus, you know, trying to do your own diligence at the top down.
Yeah, I'd use the term field expedient. That may resonate with the DoD rather than the big fancy field expedient. They'll understand that, and that's what it is. And racing drones is field expedient because you got to run over and reassemble it and throw it back up in the air. So this community, I think one thing we haven't focused on is open source. And so what the community kind of indirectly referring to is a community of people who use your product, but also in general, writ large, open source.
Correct. And, you know, the nice thing about open source is, you know, any government user can go download our open source. You know, we are approved, you know, within every civilian agency. You know, we are in production deployments across all branches of government. So they can download this and they can start playing around with it and saying, hey, could I solve this problem that I have? The typical, you know, government procurement cycle is I have to, you know, build my requirements. I have to go do a procurement. I've got to, you know, manage the process. 18 months later, I get to actually get my hands on the technology. With open source, I get to go solve the problem. And, you know, there's some great examples out there. We have a big user in Department of Homeland Security. Some guys took some junk hardware and said, what could we do with this junk hardware? And they downloaded the software. They started playing around with it. They showed to their higher ups like, hey, this is working. This is doing really compelling mission critical stuff. And they got funding thrown at them and it became a legitimate program, which is doing massive scale, you know, stuff for them now. So that's the great thing, you know, is that there are innovators in government that are out there solving these problems, and open source is leading that way. It's enabling people to bypass the traditional tools and to solve hard problems quickly.
So if I'm sitting on my deck with a neighbor and I'm trying to come up with 9 words that describe your company, let me throw these out and see if it's close. It's like having your own mission control, only better. Back to satellites. It's mission. I think this is like mission control.
Yeah, well, we, you know, I consider this, you know, for a lot of folks, a speed layer on top of your data. You know, that's one of the nice things, you know, for you is that in the government, you know, we have these things like systems of record, you know, where it's like this has to work on Oracle because that's my official system of record. But what I'd like to do is I'd really like a fast way to get through, you know, not only my Oracle data, but also my machine data and other things like that. So if I put this speed layer over on top of it, it can allow me to slice and dice and ask any question that I want, wherever my mind can go, just like I do with a Google search, without having to disrupt all of my production deployments of these other technologies that are out there.
And I think this is what some people at the Salesforce event were talking about, is they're talking about different divisions of commercial organizations are using their Salesforce data and running different types of analytics on them, because each department may want to have different amounts of information, and they're not getting it from, let's say, some organizations, but they can almost have a speed layer. This is what I want to know about this particular group of customers. Right. And you can do it quickly and just extract what you need.
You always have users who know, you know, have their own domain experience. And part of the problem is, you know, if I build a dashboard that is the dashboard that this particular user likes, it may not be the one that the one next to him wants. And so empowering the masses to be able to go out and create dashboards and visualizations easily that meet their particular needs, and your users know more about your data than you do. So, you know, it would be stupid for Elastic to come out and say, this is how you should visualize data for this particular DoD group. Those users know better, you know, what to do. What we need to do is make it very easy, drop and drag for them to be able to build these types of visualizations and explore them and modify them to meet their mission needs.
Hey, let's take a break and come back. We'll talk about some breaking news from last week, where there were some parts of the federal government that were talking about a reorg plan. And what the heck's reorg got to do with your company? I don't know. We'll talk about it after the break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In this studio, George Young, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We have world famous George Young in the studio, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic. We've been talking about all kinds of new ways to handle big data, how to get important information out of big data. We've tossed around terms like petabyte and terabyte and all kinds of fancy words and data visualization. And I think the real question is that my listeners want to know is that, well, George, you're a smart guy. You know a lot of stuff, but what does this mean to me? I mean, how can your company help me at my agency this year? And I'll give you an example. Everyone knows what came out a couple weeks ago was the reorg plan. And it seems to me whenever a big organization talks about reorg, it means my budget's going to be cut. That's the code word for cut your budget. And so I'll ask you right face-to-face here, George. So you've got this, you work for this company called Elastic. How can you help my listeners who are going to get beat over the head with a reorg plan?
Yeah, well, there's a big challenge now. You know, a lot of people are facing, you know, number one, data volumes are just growing. You know, I talked to some CISOs and CIOs. They're giving me numbers of on order of magnitude of 5 to 10x data growth over the next 2 to 3 years. So I'm going to have a lot more data, and the mission needs are not going to go down, but I'm going to have less people, you know, to do that with. And the traditional problem that the government has is, you know, we say, you know, I need to get money to re-architect my old system onto the new system in order to save money. And that's really hard to come by. So I get not only do I get budget cuts, but I don't get my money to re-engineer things. So how do I solve this quandary? And I would bring it back to those innovators, those DIY people that are on site who have already downloaded open source Elastic. You know, will often give you a path to get there. So we've seen a number of projects, you know, where, you know, we have empowered these innovators. They've gotten projects up and running in hours or days, and they've been able to go to their management and say, look, we can turn this thing off and we can turn this thing on. I've already proved it out. It already works at this level. We can scale it to the next level. And so there's a, you know, I would call it kind of a cap policy where you say, we're no longer going to invest in the old technology here. We're going to start putting the new stuff in this new technology. The barrier to entry is very low for that. We can get you up and running, you know, like I said, in a matter of days in most situations. And then eventually it'll prove its value and you'll be able to migrate off of those old tools and shut down those millions of dollars of licenses that you're paying right now and take advantage of what's in the open source community. So it comes down to innovation that is happening at the grunt levels. You know, if any senior execs are listening here and want to know who those innovators are in their agency, they can contact us and we'll tell them because we know who they are. We've been interacting with them. And the good news is there's a lot of innovation going on across the federal government.
Many millennials not big fans of interacting with human beings on a telephone or face-to-face, but what they like to do is get hands-on and then establish a relationship almost with the code and then develop a relationship with the company. And so this is a very good way for someone who's has a big project this year and they know they're going to get hit, and so they come up with a some free way that we can work around. Well, maybe, I don't know, try this and patch this together and try this and run your software and then get to the point, well, yeah, I think we can eliminate some of these costs involved with licensing software.
I think and a great cost. Example, this is over at GSA, the 18F group, you know, does a lot of innovation, uses Elasticsearch a lot. And I was talking to one of their senior leaders recently, and they said, you know, that an agency reached out to them and said, here are our requirements. We have this big project. We think it's going to take a really long time. And they gave them their requirements, and they said they showed up for the first meeting with an 80% solution already working on Elasticsearch. And the agency was blown away. They're like, holy cow, how did you get this much done that fast? And so, you know, there are some really fast moving, you know, ability to get to this, and the things that you've been told, like it's going to take you years to get it done and massive amounts of people, isn't necessarily true anymore.
And if you have a 27-year-old, and I know a lot of 27-year-olds, what they're going to want to do is they're not going to pick up a phone, and marketing study after marketing study said they're not going to pick up the phone and talk to George Young, hell or high water, and ain't going to happen. However, they're going to go to your site and poke around, watch a video, see someone else's experience, play with it themselves, maybe go to an event and just really, and then develop a relationship in a different way someone my age would. But these are all the tools here that allows my listeners to develop that relationship with your software. And maybe it doesn't work for them. And you're going to say, well, then fine. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Correct. And we believe this stuff sells itself. So my team's job is really to technically enable people. And the good news is that we have users who have built, you know, clusters that are hundreds of nodes that we've never spoke to before. And I think that speaks to the power of the technology, that people can go out and do really cool stuff with it at scale without having to pay me a massive amount of money to send a team of contractors on site to build it.
So I was at an event last year, the Amazon Web Services event, and I was kind of strolling around looking for new names. And I saw this name Elastic, and I said, what the heck do they do? And so I started to talk to people at Elastic. And there's another company in town called Google that does a lot of similar things. And all of a sudden, that you have a relationship with Google as well, don't you?
That's correct. You know, so there's a lot of interesting things going on in the cloud right now. You know, Amazon has built an Elasticsearch as a service offering, you know, which is a fork of our open source code. We will be at the Amazon Public Sector Summit this year talking to users. We have a lot of users who are running Elasticsearch inside of Amazon. But, you know, a big endorsement for us was that Google has released their search technology on Google Compute, which is Elasticsearch. So Microsoft as well has announced that their search capability on Azure is also Elasticsearch. So, you know, there is a coalescing, you know, I think that the major cloud providers are understanding that the battle's kind of been won technically. This is the leading horse that everyone really is wanting to adopt right now. And they're getting involved with us in various levels. And it's, you know, I think it's very exciting for the government because it'll give an easy path for people to work with the various cloud providers and have options out there for, you know, getting things going.
I'm thinking about working on lawnmowers and bicycles and using a 10-millimeter wrench. And I can use that on my bicycle and my lawnmower and several other things. It's like, well, you know, it can be a tool that can be used on Microsoft or Amazon or Google. It's kind of like that thing in your toolbox that it doesn't care where the bolt is. If the bolt's on your lawnmower, you got to wrench it, and everyone's putting their lawnmowers together this time of year, aren't they? But that's what I did. I had to get, and that's literally what I did last week. I had to look for a tool to fix the lawnmower, and it was a 10-millimeter. And said, I can also use this on something else and around the house, couldn't you?
And I think, you know, the cloud's going to be big because people can lease capacity, can go in, you know, prototype stuff, solve a problem, show people that it works, you know, turn it over to somebody else, you know, at that time. Some things are going to still end up on premise, you know. I think it's a little misnomer in government that everything is going to the cloud. There are some workloads that belong on premise. And the good news is that we can work in both environments, and we work closely, you know, with people who have on-prem deployments as well as cloud deployments. And as you mentioned, it's a generic tool that you can use in whatever thing that meets the mission needs.
There are people who are proponents of proprietary software in this town who, if you say the word open source to them, they roll their eyes back and they go, well, computer security, vulnerability, you might as well open the front door, buddy. Now, I know there's counterarguments to that as well, but let's give us a quick little counterargument to that, because I heard that 3 days ago.
Yeah, I think there's a misnomer. You know, first off, there are different types of open source projects. You know, ours is, I would call it a benevolent dictatorship, which means that we own the code. We are the only ones who can write code for it. So there's no guy that's over in the Czech Republic who writes code who somehow sticks it into our open source stuff. Only Elastic engineers actually write the code that goes into Elasticsearch, into our open source product. And we make it available under an open source license. Number two, it's inherently more secure than your enterprise software. Why? Because it's open source. Anyone can read the source code, which gives us lots of eyes on the source code to see where there are vulnerabilities, which, you know, you're not going to get that from Oracle. Oracle does not make their source code available. They're not going to be the most forthright about when they have vulnerabilities and things like that. So having the power of community behind it, I believe that open source is inherently more secure than enterprise software because of the large number of people that can see that, that can look for vulnerabilities and that can report that back into the community and get those things addressed. So I feel like our position is actually a much stronger one than enterprise software, having worked in both worlds in my life.
Next 5 years for the federal government going to be very, very interesting. I think the next 5 months are going to be interesting because we have a 180-day reorg plans coming up here. So stay tuned to Federal News Radio for breaking news on that. But from your perspective, George, do you think this opportunity that's presenting itself here as far as reorganization, is that going to finally force people to open their eyes and look at new things? Or where do you see this whole world changing in the next 5 years for open data and amount of information they have?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a time of great innovation. You know, the good news has been, you know, as the DoD has struggled under the mandates that they've had to make better choices. And you know, when you have less money, you have to really decide what's strategic to me, what's important to me. We have a number of users who are coming to us who are saying, you know, logging is commodity. Why am I paying a massive amount of money to people for log analytics? You know, when there's got to be a better way to do that. And so, you know, having less money will force those strategic decisions, and yet you'll have key partners that you're working with. I believe it'll also lead to a lot of innovation, you know, that it's going to require innovation. We're not going to find our way out of this by just cutting budgets and draconian cuts. So we're going to need to innovate our way out of it, not just, you know, solve today's problems, but also be forward thinking. What else can we do with it? You know, there's a lot of great things going on with public data now, and people are making data available, you know, in ways that they've never been able to before, and the public can collaborate on that. So I think there's exciting times ahead, a lot of opportunities ahead, and I think the budget cuts will force the government to make intelligent decisions, and we think we're going to be a part of that.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for the interview. You have been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, George Young, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector at Elastic.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.